Hello and welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review, and we're recording from Studio WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is Francis Fukuyama, author of Liberalism and Its Discontents. Frank, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
The opening line of your new book is this, quote, "This book is intended to be a defense of classical liberalism," unquote. And then you say, quote, "that liberalism is under severe threat around the world," unquote. So tell us, Frank, what is classical liberalism and what's the threat?
Well, I have a very specific definition of classical liberalism that may not accord with that of other people. In my view, classical liberalism begins with the premise that we are all individuals with a certain universal level of dignity that needs to be respected by other people and by the state, and that the way that a liberal society does that is through a rule of law that limits the power of the state to, you know, interfere with the fundamental rights of people. It is linked to a cognitive mode known as modern natural science that assumes that there's a objective world outside our subjective consciousnesses, and that we can perceive and manipulate that world, which is really what brings us to the technological evolution that we've seen over the past centuries and, you know, brings about modern prosperity and the like. And it basically recognizes individuals over cultural groups, over other group organizations of human beings, and says that, you know, fundamentally, those individuals are the ones that are equal and should be treated equally through a rule of law and through a constitutional limitation of power.
What's the threat?
Well, there's a threat on both the right and the left. So I think on the right, there's an unhappiness with the fact that we've lowered the horizons of politics. And, you know, people feel that there ought to be a kind of common culture or even a common religious grounding for the state that unites people. And then on the left, there's a belief that liberalism has never lived up to its promise of equality, that because it's very procedural, it's slow, and it doesn't deliver social justice on the schedule that they would like. And both sides, I think, have attacked liberal institutions, you know, for different reasons, but leading to the same, you know, feeling that liberalism is an outdated doctrine that doesn't apply anymore in current circumstances.
Conservatives sometimes refer to themselves as classical liberals, but there's a war within conservatism right now over the meaning of all this, isn't there?
Well, yes, and I think it really has to do with, you know, the grounds on which you base our national identity. In my view, national identity cannot be linked to a characteristic that you can't do anything about, like your race or ethnicity or gender. You know, it really needs to be a liberal national identity, meaning accessible to all people that actually live in the territory of your society and are subject to its jurisdiction. And, you know, that's an issue that divides people because there's a lot of diversity existing in modern societies. It's been fueled by the movement of people across national borders, and that's one of the things that a lot of conservatives really object to.
Does the word liberal need a kind of new branding? I'm wondering if it's damaged beyond recognition. It means what it means, but then you get conservatives who call themselves classical liberals, but they're opposed to liberals in the Democratic Party. It quickly becomes confusing.
Well, yes, I think it depends where you are also, because in Europe, a liberal means someone that's actually right of center, you know, that believes in free markets and more conservative economic policies. But in the United States, you know, it's been associated with a certain kind of progressivism that actually, I believe, is a distortion of classical liberalism, because progressives in many cases don't want to treat people as individuals. They want to treat them as members of, you know, particular groups or minorities, you know, rather than seeing them as human beings with a kind of universal equality. Whether that's irreversible, I don't know, but that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, because I want to show people that there's an older understanding of liberalism isn't rooted in that kind of understanding of, you know, our society.
Where do libertarians fit into this picture? They often call themselves classical liberals, too.
Well, you know, libertarianism is really a kind of American, very American doctrine that is really organized around hostility to the state. You know, that the state is the enemy of economic growth, but it's also the enemy of personal liberty. And there's therefore, you know, a desire to cut back the state or limit it to the maximum extent possible. That's not my position, because I think that an actual liberal society needs a state. You need this legitimate monopoly of force or power that's able to enforce laws, that's able to deliver, you know, basic services that people demand. And you actually can't have liberal rights unless you have a state that is capable of enforcing those rights. And therefore, you know, I think the libertarian attitude towards the state is problematic, because, you know, the state is necessary.
Frank, liberalism has survived a lot of challenges over the years. Are the current ones unique?
Well, I think a little bit of historical perspective is in order. You know, liberalism really appeared at the end of Europe's wars of religion in the 17th century, when people said, you know, we're sick of killing each other over whether we're Protestant or Catholic or some sect within those two traditions, and therefore we need a liberal society where we tolerate each other. And then it was challenged in the 19th and early 20th century by nationalism that said, our national identity needs to be, you know, imposed on other people, which then led to two world wars and, you know, again, a really horrendous outcome for European civilization. And in 1945, people said, well, maybe, you know, the nation shouldn't be primary. Maybe individual rights, you know, are more important. And, you know, those were pretty horrendous periods in human history, more violent and, you know, where you saw a greater collapse of institutions than I think anything that's happened at present. And that's really what gives me some hope that in the future, you know, this doctrine will survive, because when people see the alternative to a liberal society, either in a dictatorship or in a bloody conflict, you know, they begin to realize that the peace and prosperity that's promised by liberalism is not so bad.
Are you optimistic then about the future of classical liberalism?
Well, it depends on the time frame. I think in a very long perspective, I don't think it's going to disappear and it will make a comeback. I'm rather worried about the United States right now, because I do think that the degree of polarization is so severe that you know, the very idea of America, you know, having a common identity is, you know, very severely challenged, certainly more so than any time I can remember in my lifetime. And so getting through the short to medium term is going to be the challenge before we can get to the long term.
One more question. You're involved with a publication called The American Purpose. What is The American Purpose, and how can listeners check it out?
Well, it's just AmericanPurpose, all one word, .com. It's an online journal, and we founded it to defend, you know, classical liberalism, as I've tried to define it, from both the attacks on the right and on the left. So I welcome your listeners to, you know, take a look and see if they like what they read.
The author is Francis Fukuyama. The book is Liberalism and Its Discontents. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.